Well, last week I talked about religious intolerance, and when I discovered that this was the day after, is it the 28th? The day after Civitas' death in 1553, it came to my attention that the decision to come to this church on Sunday morning, at the risk of sounding a bit grandiose, in our culture may be one of the most important decisions you make during the course of the week. Your presence here demands religious tolerance just by being here. And when you make a decision to come here, you put a voice into our community that demands religious tolerance. Unitarianism is still heresy. And I want to be clear about that as I begin to talk about love. Yes. I thought I would begin with a very brief review of a spiritual practice that I introduced, I think, about a month ago. And because I think it takes a mature sense of love to engage in this kind of spiritual practice. And I really don't have a name for the practice yet, except for I'm still calling it the narcissistic loop and the horizontal empathy. And when we're talking about relationships with one another and with ourselves, I think it's important that we be able to move between self-reflection and interpreting the world in terms of who we are and our own personal histories, and also being able to understand the world from the other's perspective and their history at the same time, and be able to move back and forth, which would be the loop, interpreting the world through my eyes and my own personal history, but also with empathy, being able to step in the shoes of the other person and interpreting the world from their eyes, given their own personal history. And an example that really struck me of why this is important, I can remember years ago on Father's Day, two stories. One was where somebody came up to this man I knew and wished him Happy Father's Day. But I knew him rather well, and 20 years ago he had a child that died on Father's Day. So to care for this man, if you really knew him, you wouldn't say Happy Father's Day to that man, because for him, he remembered the death of his son. And so that would be that horizontal empathy, where we know the other person well enough when we step into their shoes that when we talk to them, we have some understanding of who they are and how to care about them, not just interpreting the world from our own perspective. So given our tendency, I think, to interpret the world from our own perspective and sometimes ignore the perspective and the person and the personal history of the other person, that this way of practicing spirituality needs attention, and we need to be intentional about it. So when I speak of love, I'm speaking with that understanding in the background, that it is an act of love to be able to understand myself and my own personal history, but it's also an act of love to be able to understand the other person and their history. And as I make decisions in life, I consider both my own history and the other person's history. So when I thought about speaking of love, I thought about, well, where should I begin to speak of love? And then that phrase came to me, what is it I want it? How do I get it? And I think that's, we think of love, we think of that. We think of positive things. So I decided to turn to the poets in thinking about love. I'm not so sure that was the best idea, because poets say a variety of things when we think about love. And I thought I'd read some examples of what I mean by that. Long have I waited for thee, and when you arrive, I weep. I will come around until we sing and dance upon the field of flowers. On the edge of cliffs we hear oceans calling. Shadows follow our every movement, as the sun gives way to the lightness of air and time. Our hearts have left our bodies dancing, such joy only the wings of the wind might know. And at first I thought, well, when I wrote that, isn't that nice? But then I had to ask myself the question, how is it that shadows and edges of cliffs come into the conversation of love? From George Herbert, "Love bid me welcome. Love bade me welcome, yet my soul drew back, guilty of dust and sin." And I'm thinking, what exactly does that look like? Love bids me welcome, but my soul draws back, guilty of sin and dust. Then I thought, you know, if I really changed my behavior and demonstrated my best self to my partner, would she be angry I haven't been my best self for the past 20 years? She might. So should I risk that? I love, but I draw back into dust and guilt because of my sin of absence, maybe. Love. Upon Love by Robert Herrick. Love brought me into a silent grove and showed me there a tree where some had hanged themselves for love and gave a twist to me. I thought, this sermon isn't quite turning out the way I wanted it to, because I wanted it to be positive and glowing, but then these poets are showing me another side of love. So then I turned to the prophet, Gibran. Yes. When love beckons to you, follow him. Through his ways are hard and steep, and when his wings enfold you, yield to him. Though the sword hidden among his pinions may wound you, and when he speaks to you, believe in him, though his voice may shatter your dreams as the north wind lays waste the garden. For even as love crowns you, so shall he crucify you, and even as he is for your growth, so he is for your pruning. Even as he ascends to your height and caresses your tenderest branches that quiver in the sun, so shall he descend to your roots and shake them in their clinging to the earth. Like sheaves of corn, he gathers you unto himself. He threshes you to make you, naked. He sifts you to free you from your husks. He grinds you to whiteness. He kneads you until you are pliant. And then he assigns you to his sacred fire, that you may become the sacred bread for God's sacred feast. And all these things shall love do unto you, that you may know the secrets of your heart. And in that knowing, become a fragment of life's heart. But if in your fear you seek only love's peace and love's pleasure, then it is better for you that you cover your nakedness and pass out of love's threshing floor into the seasonless world, where you shall laugh, but not all of your laughter. Where you shall weep, but not all of your tears. Love gives naught but itself and takes naught but from itself. Love possesses not, nor would it be possessed, for love is sufficient unto love. When you love, you should not say, God is in my heart, but rather, I am in the heart of God. And think not you can direct the course of love, for love, if it finds you worthy, directs your course. Love has no other desire but to fulfill itself, but if you love and must needs have desires, let these be your desires. To melt like a running brook that sings its melody to the night. To know the pain of too much tenderness. To be wounded by your own understanding of love. And to bleed willingly and joyfully. To wake at dawn with a winged heart and give thanks for another day of loving. To rest at the noon hour and meditate love's ecstasy. To return home at evening tide with gratitude, and then to sleep with a prayer for the beloved in your heart, and sing a song of praise upon your lips. This love's no easy stuff. And then I began to remember my own personal history of loves from the time I was 14 till now at 54. I thought today, given the many directions one could go with love and what that might mean for us, especially in this time when there's so many things going on in our culture that would draw our attention outward to many things that upset us and don't upset us, that maybe we have neglected ourselves by being upset. So I thought today I would focus on learning to live loved. Do we live with a sense of being loved? So I've been trying that for 2 weeks. Trying to get a sense for, when I feel loved, what does it feel like? What does it feel like? When I feel loved, what does it feel like? And I said, well, that feels pretty good. I like that. I have a tendency to be nicer, kinder. I'm more joyful standing in the grocery line. Just more pleasant when I feel loved. But then I forget. And about 2 days later, I think, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be feeling loved and learning to live loved, and I have to get back to that. And then I realize, this is not such an easy thing, learning to live loved. It's something that fades in and out. So then I read the prophet, and I thought, well, have I presented myself to love? Have I made myself available to be loved? And have I really made myself available to love? And I know that in working in the counseling field for many years and have led many divorce recovery workshops, that it's often a decision that when somebody goes through a divorce that is so painful and so hurtful, consciously and unconsciously, sometimes we humans make decisions never to love like that again. Because if I love like that again, I can hurt like this again, and I'm not going to do it. Therefore, I don't avail myself to be loved, nor to love like I have the capacity to love. So in reading the prophet, and I thought, well, maybe this also plays a role in my resistance. Using the metaphor of corn, we have to be thrashed and sifted and ground and kneaded to become compliant, and what that might mean. But then when I look back through my relationship, sometimes I have felt thrashed and sifted and kneaded and compliant. And how many of us have ever really given up our truest selves to maintain some kind of relationship so that we could stay in love? That we become conformed, compliant. How many of us have ever been in love and something happens and our hearts break and our knees buckle and we can't even walk? How many of us have ever tried to move and to walk away from a relationship and our knees buckle and begin to sob until we can't sob anymore? Or how many of us have ever been in a relationship and we don't sob until 3 years later? Love is an odd thing. It shapes us. It makes us who we are when we avail ourselves to love. It matures us if we allow it. And the pain of lost love and the pain of love and the weeping of availing myself to too much tenderness, there I can begin to truly know not just myself, but the other person. Because I have these pains and hurts and loves and joys, but so does the other person. So I begin to move away from interpreting the world just in terms of who I am and my own personal history.
And genuine love helps me to move into the shoes of the other person so that they can, so that I can see from their perspective to know how to love them better. So I got to thinking, well, how are we to understand and really grab a hold of learning to live loved? And how are we to know what love means in a rational way, in a way that makes sense, because it seems so fleeting? And many years ago, I came up with this idea that persons, at the core of who they are, that we are blessed, known, good, and loved. And that was our spiritual base for who we are as human beings in relationship to one another. That we are blessed, known, good, and loved. That we do welcome one another and we do care for one another. And that's who we are as human beings, to be able to know one another and allow ourselves to be known with a sense of emotional safety. But when it comes to the love, how am I to actualize that? So today I'm going to focus on how do we actualize learning to live loved. I must first take an attitude of love. And remember what it felt like to be loved? Because I know you all accessed that when I told you to do so. That learning to feel loved. How do I take that feeling of love and in my imagination or on paper somehow go back to before I was born? Go back to before I was conceived and begin to walk my own lifeline with an attitude of love and travel through every aspect of my life. One time I was sharing this idea that we are blessed, known, good, loved with a minister, a friend of mine, when I was first wrestling with trying to understand who we are spiritually. And I told that to him, that this is who we are. And he said, "Oh, that's fluff theology. That's neo-Pelagianism." And I went, having been through therapy for a number of years and worked in counseling, I said, "You haven't got a clue, because this in no way is fluff theology. Because for me to love myself, knowing what I did when I was 10 in relationship to my sister, to when I was 14, to when I was 20, to when I was 25, I know the things I've done in my life. And for me to enter those memories with an attitude of love, to love myself, is no easy thing to do. And I know that personally, and I also know that with talking to other people, that this is a hard thing to do. So when I say learning to live loved, learning to live with a sense of being loved, I know I'm not inviting you to something easy to do. This is something that is hard to do. But yet at the same time, it is the core to spirituality. I don't know of one religion, of one spiritual leader that does not move us in the direction of loving ourselves and caring for ourselves. So the question would be, how do we escape without making a lot of noise? So the question is, am I willing to take the risk to bring all of who I am out of the shadows in the first poem I read? All of who I am, away from the edge and the anxieties of life, of the edge of remembering things that I don't want to remember. Am I willing to bring myself into the light and work on loving all of who I am? Knowing that if I do that, as I enter this world and as I enter relationships and as I am in this community and as I am in this world, I will be a better person. I will be a kinder person. Am I willing to go through the work
that the prophet talks about, to be sifted, to be kneaded, to be moved, to be thrashed, to take away the rough edges of who I am, to take away all the defenses I have about myself. Am I willing to do that?
To know the pain of too much tenderness within myself.
To know the pain through empathy of the tenderness of other people who have been wounded. And I am suggesting today, that is our calling. To do just that.